Hello, and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the whiz-bang, emotionally manipulative, subliminal world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and don't forget to write intro joke for Ben. Shit. Okay.
Nice work.
All right. This week, we're taking a look at Season 3, Episode 4, Double Exposure. This episode marks the triumphant return of Robert Culp, as well as his last appearance in the villain role. Culp will make one more appearance in the series in the 80s, but as a supporting character.
Oh, but he's such a good villain.
He's so good, yep.
Well, he's the best.
It's a good last one for him. Also recurring in a, actually only in a single shot in this episode is Arlene Martel, who makes her second appearance as the other woman. She's the bikini.
Oh, yeah.
But the backstory of that is that's the other woman that's referenced, but she doesn't have any actual lines.
Oh, right. That we get like that one shot of kind of the bikini.
Yeah, she was previously the mistress slash maybe not mistress in season 2 episode 2, The Greenhouse Jungle.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah,
the
yeah.
guy that the of course. She claimed that nothing happened?
Right.
This episode also stars Chuck McCann as the murder victim. McCann is best known as a voice actor who lent his voice to numerous Saturday morning cartoons, including as Leatherneck on G.I. Joe, DuckTales, The Smurfs, Fantastic Max, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, Gummy Bears, Winnie the Pooh, Tailspin, Garfield and Friends, Toxic Crusaders, Where's Waldo, and he played both Pinky and Blinky in the Pac-Man cartoon.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait. You said DuckTales, and then there was something mm-hmm. else after that.
DuckTales, let's see. DuckTales, The Smurfs,
Smurfs, that was it. What was he in The Smurfs?
I minor characters. Okay. I mean, he wasn't a Smurf.
But they're... Okay.
There are almost other characters than the Smurfs on the Smurfs.
Yeah, Gargamel and his cat.
They're other people show up.
Do they?
Yes.
Okay. I just thought it was all blue people.
No. That you're thinking of Avatar.
Oh. No, Blue Man Group. That was it.
That's it.
Okay.
Chuck McCann has passed, but he leaves behind him a legacy of beloved supporting characters in the childhoods of millions.
Really? Is Leatherface a beloved supporting character?
It's not Leatherface, it's Leatherneck.
Sorry.
like a Marine, Leatherneck, because it's G.I. Joe.
So still a murderer. Marine.
He's a Marine.
Okay.
He's a government sanctioned murderer. Thank you very much.
I believe we call...
they're called the troops, and you're supposed to support them.
Yeah.
Ben. And, Benjamin.
This is awkward.
That's a good way to start out the episode.
No. Can we start over?
No. So this is a amazing episode.
This is a really incredible episode.
Every single, all the Robert Culps are amazing.
Yeah, no, but this is a very...
This is probably my favorite of the three, I would say.
It's so strong and like...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's because Culp is now, you know, graying.
Yeah.
Or if it's just like he's had a few more years of honing his craft.
But yeah, just
like,
a couple years though. It's not that long.
Yeah, but still, he was clearly a working actor.
Oh yeah.
And he is so sharp in this, like from the get-go, like his little tells to the camera basically, you know, everything he does in this is really marvelous.
Yeah. This is the advantage I think of having recurring murderers is they like understand the format of the show,
right?
And then he can really like play into it in the perfect way. He's had two shots at it, and this one feels like a masterclass in how to play a Columbo villain.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I would love to know if the script got twiddled for Culp.
Yeah,
because it's clear that like every prior scene where he and Columbo were going at it and, you know, and the other two were so good that they were like, well, let's just make that most of this.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you pointed it out when we were watching it, but like, it's so quick that it gets to the like, I'm pretty sure you did it. Well, you ain't got proof, so fuck you.
There's about another half an hour or 20 minutes left.
And it's the best.
It's real good.
There's just so much hate.
Yeah, so we should do the rundown.
Yeah, that's probably important because...
Always important.
Because it's Culp, so there's at least two outfits I want to talk about.
Of course.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts myself.
Yeah.
So this episode, he is a advertising consultant.
Yes, he is a doctor.
A doctor.
Mr. Doctor.
Who has written a series, we find out later, has written a series of books sort of on manipulative advertising.
Yes. How to, the psychology of salesmanship.
Yes. I think he's a doctor of psychology.
Yeah.
Yes. He is working for an ad agency that is, I guess, just an ad agency. He's making ads for an ad agency.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah. It seems like he sort of has an operation and they make advertising for
people, but I mean the right. client that's the murderer, I believe, is an ad agency.
Yeah,
because it seems
right.
like from the context of the thing, what he's selling is selling.
Yeah, he's selling.
Right. So he makes this video. The client has been honey trapped by him using this model.
That's
this,
right.
Actress.
Tanya Baker,
yes, who has no lines,
right,
does not actually appear in the episode outside of the single shot
in a film that right they are viewing.
Yes, she does not have like an active role in the story, truly.
Yeah.
So he hired this woman and then got her to seduce the client,
right? Vic Norris is the client.
Vic found out that he had done this.
Right. He sniffed out that it was a trap.
He's going to fire him, and then he's going to talk to the DA about, like, have you done this before? Which
right.
He obviously has.
Clearly.
So the plot to kill him is pretty complex.
There's a lot going on,
yeah.
And they kind of explain to you some of how it works, like,
yeah.
halfway through the episode.
But it's one of those ones where you kind of see things happening, and mm-hmm. I know, because I've seen it, kind of what each one means, but they don't tell
right.
you really what it is, or even kind of what the individual parts are. You kind of have to piece it together,
right.
Which is, it's great.
It's a really good way of setting it up, because you clearly know, like, okay, this is Mr. Murder, and you get to see the thing, but you don't totally have all the pieces, like,
yeah.
you don't fit it all together until they kind of give you the information in the episode. I mean, unless you are obsessed with the idea of subliminal advertising, in which case you might have picked up
I think that part, at least, you understand that part at the very
right,
least.
Right.
But that might just be because we're more familiar with that concept of subliminal. Like,
right.
I think in the 70s and the 80s, it was more of a buzz thing. It's illegal
yeah.
now.
Well, they mentioned that it was made illegal. Like, that it's illegal by the time this was filmed.
Right.
So clearly it's a thing that, you know.
It's also junk science.
Well,
I mean,
sure.
it does bear mentioning that there
right.
have been no, like, studies that show that subliminal advertising has any actual effect.
Right.
But it's incredibly important for this episode of Columbo that it does have an
right.
effect.
So remember, we're all pretending along with Columbo
right.
that subliminal advertising works
also,
and is real.
A good note for this is that none of the films, when they play them, that are supposed to have subliminal advertising in them actually do have
right.
those frames in them, because if you've ever seen something that has subliminal advertising in it, you can see it.
Yeah, you notice.
It's not completely seamless.
No, those frame rates are not
one
fast
frame out of
to
30. Your brain will see a single frame in
right.
out of 30 in a second.
Or in film, like, one out of 24. Like, it's going to be pretty obvious.
You will at least if you cannot actually know what the image is, you will recognize that something is happening.
Right.
Especially with this one, because it's like two of the subliminal cuts are multiple images.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Over a long period. So that, especially the ones that they do. So he sorry, I've gotten into the weeds, but
yeah, yeah.
Basically
right.
What he does is he feeds the guy expensive caviar, cuz he knows
mm-hmm.
he loves caviar. I think he salted it as well. Though
he
that's not explicit.
Have, I think that
it
is
might
more
just be
about
that caviar is incredibly.
Yeah, caviar is a very salty food.
Yes. So he's given him expensive caviar,
mm-hmm.
And then
he's also turned up the thermostat.
Right. He says that the thermostat is broken, but it's probably he just broke it himself.
Well, I mean, we watch him, like, literally take it from where it's at
oh,
in, like,
and
the
like,
60s and crank it to, like, 80
I,
or 90.
Yeah, I missed yeah. that part. So caviar.
But we also see him
splice in a couple frames of, like, an iced tea or,
yeah.
or some kind of cold drink into shots of a desert.
Yes.
Then he takes a tape recorder, which has a recorded portion of a speech.
Right.
Then he sets all this up. these are kind of all of the major things. And then also there's a, he takes a gun, which he has guns on the wall.
Right. And he's got trophies for being a sharpshooter.
Yes. And he attaches something to it, which we don't know at the time.
Right. That's not all. The other thing that he does while he is splicing in the projection room is he fucks with the monitor so that he routes the feed for
there's
the monitor.
There is a closed circuit security TV or something. Just
yeah,
to kinda,
no, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that it's actually for security. I think it's just for the projectionist to know kind of where people are to get ready.
I mean, that's still technical, but...
But, I mean, it's not semantics. For security. Right, right, it's for the projectionist to know. Like, for presentations and things.
Yeah, yeah.
So the he has disabled.
He routes it, I believe.
No, I think he
does. He just disable
I think he
it?
Just disables okay. it. Yeah, because when he goes to his thing later, I thought that he was going to look at the room to kind of see where the guy was. But all he does is he monitors where the film is, so that he knows when how much time he has to get back. So the victim goes in with them, reveals that he's going to fire him.
Right.
They go into this room. He's sweating. Everyone's sweating because of the
Well, he's noticeably sweating more than everyone
but
else.
But everybody looks uncomfortable.
Right.
And the video plays with the interspliced.
Right. And so Culp is, or rather Dr. Keppel is narrating.
Right. But then
live, except he's doing it behind the curtain and he turns on the tape recorder.
Yep.
That has a pre-recorded narration,
right?
So that he can slip out and shoot Vic.
It's amazingly timed too, because he does a really good like.
Boy, it's
he
really
he starts the thing and then starts talking.
Yeah.
In his voice, and then at a certain point, it switches over to the tape.
It, right. It's a very well rehearsed murder.
Yes, I mean, and that's kind of the thing. This is an incredibly overthought murder, and it's great.
Right. Well, it's meant, and I love it because it's meant to demonstrate like what a brilliant mind this guy has, and how careful and precise he is, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's also a real boon that subliminal advertising works in this universe
right. In the universe of television, I think it always works, but the client Vic goes out into the lobby to get a drink from a drinking fountain. Keppel.
It's all right.
It's weird. Keppel comes out, shoots him, runs back to his office, takes the thing off the gun, puts the gun back in the case, and then sneaks back into the projection room and starts narrating as soon as the tape runs out.
Yep.
Then he hits rewind and records over the tape when the body is discovered.
Right.
And then Columbo comes in. I mean, that's like the important part.
Right. Then Columbo shows up and proceeds to like eat every crudité that is hanging around.
I think maybe we can just discuss the murder. I think like the rest of it we can kind of discuss through. I don't think we need to go through it like plot point.
Yeah, so that's basically the murder, and then everything else is just kind of, I mean, there's
unraveling.
There's unraveling. The projectionist is sly enough to make sense of what happened and basically tries to blackmail Keppel, at which point Keppel tries to frame Vic's widow.
Wife. Yes, he's already done that. There's a great scene where he's on the phone, sort of disguising his voice. He's kind of just talking like this.
He's doing a character voice.
Hi, ma'am.
Well, he's doing a very obvious like character voice as far as like Culp. And I was like, wow, it's amazing that this doctor is as good an actor as Robert Culp is. And honestly, when I saw that, my brain went to, the last couple of episodes of Columbo where it's like, I checked the phone records.
Yeah.
And a call was made from here to, I was honestly kind of expecting that to be part of the whole thing. So it's nice that, they deviated from that.
Yeah. That's kind of the problem, is that all these phone records exist.
Yeah.
It's kind of been an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
So
it's convenient when they choose to start using it.
Exactly.
And they're just like, Columbo forgot to, why wouldn't you pull the phone records and be like, hey, why did you call his house?
Columbo goes to see the wife. The wife had been lured away by this fake phone call from the boyfriend of the mistress,
Tanya Baker
out to, she, he basically told her to go out and stand on a street corner and wait until he shows up. And then,
which is to say, stand on the street corner while I am murdering your husband so that you don't have a good alibi.
Right.
Although it's very charming how Columbo responds and says, well, no, you do have an alibi. It's not a very good one, but, I also don't think you did it.
The thing is that, like, she would have been home alone anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess this is just to ensure that she doesn't, like, go out with friends or something like that.
Right, right.
But, I mean, it's an additional layer of sort of...
Sure.
Confusion to the thing. But it doesn't... Columbo is not even slightly. He says, he says that his... We learn a little bit more about Mrs. Columbo. Mm-hmm. He says that his wife is terrible...
At mysteries.
At mysteries, which is flies in the face of the Mrs. Columbo, the television show,
She's
as good as Columbo.
If not better?
I
haven't seen
significantly
it,
so. Worse. But, okay. But you know, she can catch murderers.
Right. She's competent.
She caught Donald Pleasance. I saw that episode.
Oh, okay.
There's an episode where she catches Donald Pleasance. So, you know, she can catch a Pleasance-level murderer.
All right, fair. But yeah, so...
says his wife is terrible at mysteries, and even his wife could come up with a better alibi than I was alone on a street corner.
Exactly.
So,
as I hear that for the second time, it's like, that feels like kind of a dig against Mrs. Columbo.
Well, he every once in a while will do, kind of digs at her, but I think they're always loving digs.
I think
he's very affectionate.
But also always out of earshot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She's never around.
Yeah.
She literally cannot appear.
Well, she's solving other crimes.
That's right.
So he clearly doesn't think that she did it. And I think we already mentioned that the projectionist tries to blackmail Keppel, and Keppel steals a pistol from Vic's house and uses it to murder the projectionist.
Right.
And that secondary murder is another thing that Columbo kind of susses out, because he, in interviewing everyone around Vic's killing, the projectionist tells him about a trick which that the projectionist uses to know when to change reels, which is to jam a nickel at the end of the reel so it falls out and hits the floor.
Which is a real projectionist trick.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, that's the coolest thing, because it's such a weird little...
Yeah, so for people who don't know necessarily about film projection, basically all films come on multiple platters, which are just giant spools of film.
Right.
And, well, they don't come on platters, but they're put on platters. And films will have multiple reels, and they have a different projector for each reel, so you don't have to, like, take it off and put it up. So you have a different projector for each one, and then, like, as the film goes on, you just... flip one off and turn one on.
Right. So that it goes mostly seamlessly.
And with an experienced projector, projectionist, you don't even notice.
Right.
One of the things that maybe people who are a little older might remember are the dots. If you're going to see a film that's projected, another thing that's for the projectionist are there are three dots that will appear in the upper right of a screen, and that is a signal to the projectionist that this is the end, do it now, basically.
Oh,
yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that's another trick that they use. But you won't see that, you will almost never see that, because that's only in projected films.
Right, so if you're going somewhere where they're doing, like, kind of showing classics
or revival.
Like they've got, like, some vintage reels that they're showing.
Yeah.
Then you might see it.
You might see that.
Most everything now is what, digital?
Yeah, almost everything is digital projections. Like, the actual art of projection is pretty much gone. They mostly just hit play and then walk away.
Sure.
Which is why if something is wrong, it takes forever for someone to notice.
Right, because somebody has to get up and go out of the theater.
No one is actually up there.
Yeah.
So this other guy gets murdered. This is Chuck McCann, who I think does it.
Leatherface, right?
No.
Neck. Leather neck.
He's not Leatherface.
I'll get there.
It's a very different character.
I guess.
No, it's incredibly different.
It's. I've never actually seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Uh-huh.
I've definitely seen G.I. Joe, but I can't remember Leatherneck. Leatherneck.
I mean, he just looks like a regular Marine guy with like a mustache. He's not like Snake Eyes or someone like, you know, that's like Shipwreck.
Okay,
you know, somebody who's kind of got a theme. His theme is the Marines, which is not like super.
So his big thing is he's a Marine and he has a mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not...
It's not super memorable, but...
I mean, for G.I. Joe characters, they really kind of...
You know, they vary in levels of complexity.
Right.
You know,
it seems like he was an early one.
And certainly as the show got on longer, the layers of weirdness sort of increased exponentially.
Yeah. You mean like the dude who was like had camouflage skin?
Sure.
What was that guy's name?
I don't remember.
Starts with a Z?
Here's where I'm going to be honest. I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of G.I. Joe because it was a gun show.
Oh, that's
so
fair.
So,
yeah.
G.I. Joe was not a big one for me. Transformers also, even though I like now, obviously, like by talking to me, you'd be like, that guy probably loved G.I. Joe and Transformers when he was a kid.
Nope.
No, He-Man I was allowed to watch because they had swords. And swords were okay and guns weren't.
Didn't they also have like tanks that shot lasers?
No, kind of. There was sort of the future, but like nobody had like a gun. Like everybody in G.I. Joe had like a gun. It did shoot lasers,
true.
But they were just
it was
M16s.
Right. As opposed to like the swords and all the knives
the future,
and cutting
yeah.
with He-Man. And, right.
Yeah. But here's the thing. As a kid, I had a lot more access to sharp like knives than I did to guns, so I don't know what exactly they were trying to protect me from.
I don't know.
But
Thundercats? Did you get to...
I watched Thundercats,
okay.
Sure.
I've gone off the rails.
No,
now.
We're completely talking about something else. Thundercats, probably the highest dip from show intro to actual show in ever. Like, probably ever. Like, the coolest... like, the Thundercats show intro
is
the
amazing.
Coolest fucking thing in the world. The actual show is hot... garbage.
Not great.
It's cold garbage. It's it's terrible.
I mean, listen, Rankin and Bass blew the whole budget on the intro sequence and
it's
that was
so
it.
So fucking good. Anyway, Columbo is what we're actually talking about. I love this episode. I think there's a lot of like really great interactions. Like Cope is just so
There's so much.
He's very controlled. We don't see him kind of blow his top the way we did in Murder by the Book.
No, or, it's better in this because he's kind of cockier.
Yes.
And he is a little more reserved, but that contempt is still there. And it's really beautiful. There's an incredible scene where Columbo just drives onto the golf green, like just drives across the course while Cope is trying to take a shot.
And just keeps fucking with him every single time.
And just the seething that is going on is remarkable.
And it's a great scene, too, because this previous scene, Columbo basically all but accuses him. I mean, that's where he says, like, where Robert Cope says to him, boy, you'd need some proof for that.
Yeah, it's sure a shame you don't have any of that.
And it's lucky for me that that you don't have any proof. And then this is the scene where he flat out says, you did this.
You did it.
And Robert Culp says, prove it.
Yeah, he says, well, you know, that won't hold up in court.
Yeah,
you know.
If you have some evidence, then, you know, arrest me. And if you don't,
get out of my face.
Leave me alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the great resolution to that scene is that as soon as he has... bested Columbo, he takes a drive and it's an amazing shot.
Yeah,
because he's back in control.
Yes,
he's back on top. He has defeated Columbo essentially.
Yeah. It's a fantastic scene. And the catch, because this is like really the only other plot thing I think worth bringing up is Columbo has an epiphany while he's in the station, basically.
Yeah, he's talking with the detective, with another detective. This is one of the few ones where we see the police station.
Yeah.
But he's talking to another detective, and the detective says...
Is it a detective, coroner? I mean, he works
someone,
in the lab.
It's someone there, but he says, so where's the murder weapon? And the other person says, well, why don't you just ask him?
Yeah.
And that's when he gets the idea...
And he drags one of the photographers out
and
takes a bunch of photos of him pretending to search Culp's office.
Yeah, just looking at various things in the office.
And then splices it into the film that he's showing the next day.
Yeah, which is the same film.
Right.
From the beginning. And then...
Which is a nice touch,
It
I
is
thought.
A good, yeah. It's sort of the final review of the...
Yeah, what goes around comes around.
And then, so Robert Culp excuses from the thing... Walks back to his office, like gets very nervous, walks back to his office and walks to the lamp, where he pulls something out. We learn, and Columbo is there and is like, gotcha. Yeah. Takes a picture of him pulling the thing out.
It's a, what does he call it? A caliber converter?
Caliber converter, which the gun that he shot him with was a 45 or
yeah,
some,
it was a larger caliber than 22.
And then he put this thing in here, which makes it a 22.
Right.
Which is apparently a thing.
I guess.
I don't know.
I'll ask my friends that actually know guns and we'll find out.
I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe as a kid.
We got that.
It's a really great, because this is an example, I think, of one where he has him airtight. It's dead to rights, basically.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are a couple ones where Columbo sort of proves it, but might have a difficult time actually proving it in a court of law.
Right. No, this is definitely one where, like, he's got the thing that, like, yeah, and he's also sure. got it, caught him red-handed.
In the act, yeah.
Checking
on,
it.
On film.
Yeah.
Got it. This is a lock. This is an automatic. I did do a little bit of background research.
Okay.
At the time that this was filmed, the death penalty was active.
Hmm.
It had been struck down by the California Supreme Court, but then a voter initiative had made it legal.
Oh.
But it was incredibly rare. There were, I read this a while ago, but there were only like 40 in like the span of like 40 years.
Right.
Like it was incredibly rare that they would actually execute somebody.
Yeah.
That's just a side note. Like, because we've multiple times speculated, like, is the death penalty a thing? And the answer is yes, but rare. And under like very, very extreme circumstances.
Right. They would have to be really, really,
really, like,
yeah.
really guilty.
Lots of murders,
sure.
I guess is what we're saying.
I mean, Robert Culp commits two, so.
Three? Well, two this time.
Two this
Sorry,
time.
I was just tracking
no, not
all
total.
The culps.
I don't. Right. I don't think we can condense all culps into. You
no,
know,
you're
I don't
right.
think he retains culpability.
This podcast is over.
Great. Then we don't have to do the fashion segment.
I have some notes about weird and dumb stuff. I do want to point out there is a point where Columbo has gotten. Books that the good doctor Keppel
yes,
has written.
He goes to the grocery store.
And I just want to mention the best title out of all of them, which is The Mind String and How to Pull It.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, which is a very good one. The Mind String.
The Mind String.
And How to Pull It. Yeah, that sounds much worse when I say it like that. I'm not going to do that again.
It sounds like the Dianetics commercials.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So obviously, it's Robert Culp.
Yep.
Robert Culp is a gorgeous man.
Yeah, for sure.
He looks even better now that he's graying. There are two outfits that I specifically want to mention. I mean, everything generally looks good on Culp.
Yeah.
The first is the one he's wearing in the opening scenes.
Yeah,
I got
some notes on that too. He's wearing like a yellow denim motorcycle style jacket. It's like a zipped halfway up. It's got a stand up collar instead of like a normal lapeled collar that you traditionally see on a motorcycle.
You want that
jacket.
This is in the supermarket scene.
Yeah,
it's a band collar.
So like the top of the front
rider.
Panels are pressed open to kind of resemble the wide lapels of like the jackets that were probably.
No, it's literally a double rider.
Yeah, but it's got like a Western back, which is unusual, the yoke with like, and it's got like thin shoulder pads, which you can kind of see when he moves.
Did you look at my notes or did you get help?
He's got some darts down the back, common features with a Western cut jacket from the 70s, but it's tailored to the shape of you know Robert Culp's narrow frame.
It doesn't have darts in the back.
It does actually have darts in the back.
It's got the little like the Western kind of buttons at mm-hmm. the very bottom that you can use to sort of cinch it in.
Well, don't blame me. Blame my friend of the show, Jenny, who took notes for me.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to have fun with it. I just wanted to do a bit where I cared about fashion. Yeah.
Well, I know you like that jacket.
I do really like that jacket.
It's a really good jacket.
Yeah.
Like, I like that style. It's actually it's more of a British style.
I'd like it in that color, in that canary yellow.
No, it didn't seem like that part of it was quite your jam.
Yeah, but I really like the style of it. Style of it's really great.
It's very good. It's a little short on Culp, but he's a tall
but
man.
He is like a 6'6", I think.
Yeah. And the other thing was he's got a three-piece suit that is a double-breasted jacket,
This is the pinstripe at the beginning.
Yeah, the like chalk stripe. It's real good. Which is gorgeous, and then he's wearing like a striped shirt under it, and what looks to be like an ancient matter tie, which is so like when you see the sort of muted kind of paisleys, stuff like that, like that's generally, especially in this era, it's safe to assume it's probably an ancient matter tie, which is it's a type of dye process that they generally don't do at this point,
right?
But it has a very different feel. Anyway, sorry, I got in the weeds.
No,
but
it's
a really great, it's a really great suit. It looks really good on him. Yeah. Not that that's a surprise.
No,
but yeah,
always looks very well composed. The other thing I really like about that canary yellow suit is that's probably a more representative of. That might actually be Robert Culp's jacket.
Yeah.
Like, it's so well tailored to him that I would believe that it was actually his jacket.
I feel like you're probably right.
Yeah.
It definitely jibes with some of the things. I have occasionally seen him on reruns of 70s, like,
talk shows and stuff.
Yeah, specifically the one that I keep thinking of is Tattletale, okay. I think, which is, like, celebrity couple stuff.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really weird... if we were sponsored by Buzzr, that would be amazing, but we aren't. But anyway, it's on Buzzr.
It's a great. And you can see actual super cool guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think.
Yeah, he's very charming. He's very charming when he's not acting and he's just kind of being himself.
he's very charming. Even when he's being an asshole, I think he's very charming.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the hallmark of Robert Culp in all of these is that it's enjoyable to watch him be a dick to Columbo.
Right.
And Columbo be a dick to him. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, this is probably a good example of, like, Columbo sort of being very hostile to the person in a passive way. Because, like, I think for example, the Donald Pleasance one is Columbo being very reverential and very nice. And, like, even when he's kind of sideways accusing him of things, he's doing it in a friendly manner. And he's kind of poking at him. But... This is definitely more of an edge.
Like, oh, this is super aggressive.
Columbo is like, definitely like trying to to like aggressively.
He's attempting to rattle him.
Yeah.
Like and they are kind of doing it to each other, and that's part of the charm of it, is it's clear that they had fun working with each other on the screen.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't hurt that we both really obviously like Robert Culp.
Yeah.
And I mean, how can you not?
This episode was written by Stephen J. Cannell, who
wrote everything
in the 70s. He created The Rockford Files, which is an amazing show. That's a completely separate podcast I could talk about forever. But
I've noticed.
It's a fantastic show. I think he's really figured out what these actors are capable of, and like,
yes,
it's really written tailor-made to these specific actors.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really well directed, like the scene where the golf game is like, it's very good at like sort of putting them opposite each other,
yes,
and opposing, and that final shot where he makes the shot and he's looming huge and powerful, and Columbo is small and diminished,
yep,
in the background.
And you can even see that he is clearly frustrated that he didn't manage to actually kind of ensnare him in any way.
Yeah, he literally swung and missed on that one.
I'm telling you, that golf scene is so good.
It's great. It's, yeah, definitely highlight of the series so far.
So we could sit here and just kind of gush, but I think we kind of covered it.
We already have, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is a great episode. Personally, I'd put it at the best Robert Culp episode. Even though I really like Murder by the Book, and I liked the other one, the sports ball one, I thought was also very good.
Murder by the Book, Death Lends a Hand.
Death Lends a Hand. That's right. Murder by the Book is the Cassidy one.
Yeah, that's the Spielberg
one. Yeah,
it's Death Lends a Hand, and I honestly have blanked on the
I don't remember
title
the name.
Of
the most
one,
crucial game.
That's
or?
It. That's it. The most crucial game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both excellent.
Yeah.
But I think this one really manages to nail both the sort of sinister malevolence that Culp can bring.
Yeah.
That I don't think like in other roles he really got a chance to. I think this is kind of a different. This is a different thing for him.
Well, those both seem to hinge more on him losing his cool.
Yeah. And this is not that at all.
Yeah, and this is the opposite. Like, literally, he's even when he is like rattled by the subliminal, you know, advertising of Columbo in his office.
Yeah,
like he doesn't lose his cool. He just kind of rushes over.
And the last shot is of him smiling.
Crying and smiling.
Crying
and smiling. Because he's looking at, Columbo hands him the developed, like, frames, basically, of the stuff that they inserted in the film. And he's looking at it in front of, like, his little console screen, which we didn't mention, but is an amazing, like, artifact.
Yes.
Like, it looks like, I think you said, straight
it's
out
a Star,
of a
it's
Trek.
It's a Star Trek console. It's very, like, there's a lot of, like, glowing red, large red buttons with what's that tape called? The printout tape, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Nameplate tape, like that stuff you'd get out of a little gun where you turn it and you click the thing and then it's a
label tape.
Label
I guess.
Tape, yeah. I don't name let's, labels. Let's I don't just know. Go whatever with it that. Is. But yeah, it's a very fakey console that is clearly there for like just for this scene.
Right.
Like that's really the only purpose it has.
But yeah, it's so good.
It's real good. It's real good and again, no fat in this one. No air in this one.
No, there really isn't. It's incredibly, I mean, you're right. It's well written and it's well written for the people in it.
Yeah. This is the show really, like the first couple seasons have been very good, but I feel like this season has really put some pepper in. Like this, they're putting the characters through the paces. They're like, actually like stretching the format and like you know defining what makes the characters interesting. I think it's probably the best season like so far. There haven't been any where I've been like this was all right. Like they've all been great.
Yeah, there's nothing I can think of in season 3 so far that feels remotely like it was like a dud.
Yeah, no, they've all been
which
good.
Which is great.
This is actually interesting because also this episode introduces continuity, which is not a thing that has happened before. Columbo says at the very beginning that he missed dinner because he was working on the Haywood case, which is the candidate for crime. Haywood was the guy, and he was working late during that episode. So this actually is the first one to include
reference
continuity.
A prior,
and
to put it in that framework of he literally went from the Haywood murders
over to this one
to this, like with no time. No wonder he's fucking exhausted.
He's a busy guy.
Good lord,
I know. But I did think that that's kind of a great little thing in there. And it bridges the gap.
Really good.
I mean, it's not serialized. This isn't, you know, Battlestar Galactica or whatever.
No,
but
it's, no, thank
but
God.
It's not. But it is, you know, it is sort of saying this is one.
Right.
This is one story. This is not like a series of unconnected, sort of like Poirot's, which we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But they are completely divorced from each other in time and space. Like there's no really kind of reference to anything, and that's because they were written as serialized fiction and not necessarily to be read in order or anything like that.
Yeah, they were written to be standalone, and just the character is,
and I think that will stand out for Columbo. This is not like a sign of they're going to start talking about previous cases a lot. This is just kind of a little thing to throw in for fans, and he doesn't linger on it. It's just
no.
It's a single word.
It's literally like it was so quick that I didn't put it together until you brought it up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't read it on IMDb.
Well, there you go. So thanks, IMDb.
Yeah.
You're doing our work for us.
Yes, thank you for providing me with a lot a lot of information without a lot of research. I really do appreciate that. I think that'll do it.
Yeah, seems like it.
I think that's going to do it. That's an episode. That's an episode of Columboys.
Yep.
Yeah, so thanks for listening. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Oh.
What's this stuff?
Sunscreen. It blocks the sun's harmful rays. Want some?
No, I'm gonna stay out all day and get a great tan.
Look at your back. It's as red as a lobster.
I don't feel so good.
Hey, Stella, your friend's been out in the sun too long without protection.
Leatherneck!
Next time, use the sunscreen. Wear a hat and a shirt and look for some shade when it's really sunny. A bad sunburn could make you sick or put you in the hospital.
Now we know!
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter @MacJ and @DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.